Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello. So we join you as we bid a fond farewell to game week 5, perhaps the first truly testing fixture set of the season as benches get used to their max and small pass decisions begin to have repercussions in FPL outcomes. Some managers flourished, others scraped by, but a fair deal, a glimpse of the depths of a Hindu monkey style level of despair this week, that's for sure. We are Who Got the Assist. I'm Tom. You can find me on Twitter at @WGCA_FPL. My co-host Anthony is at FPL Stag. Also on Instagram, WGTA.FPL. League code is 2IP43T. We'll do a quick update for you in a little bit. Also on video as well. Never replace the audio, of course, but just so you know it's there. Head over to YouTube, see our ugly mugs. And also a handsome mug too alongside us in our guest tonight. It's Surya from the brilliant app All About FPL, who is up at 2:30 a.m. IST to be on the pod. What a madman. He's several coffees deep as well, so I'm sure we'll get lots of very energetic insight from him. But welcome, Surya. Really good to have you on.
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for having me. And it's a pleasure to be on Who Got the Assist. WGTA was one of my motivations to start All Over FPL, and I'm proud that I'm here as a guest. So looking forward to the recording. Yeah. Cheers. Awesome. Cheers for having me.
Yeah, we're absolutely delighted to have you on, Surya. It's great to finally get you on. And it's been one hell of a game week, I think. It's been a really testing one, as Tom said. And so it's pretty exciting to kind of get into it with you on this pod of all pods. I think it's a good one. And I think we're finally coming to a point where we have enough data to start making some sort of conclusions as well, which means that we're able to dive a little bit more into things. And I guess on that point, what we're going to do is look at defenses today. We've been changing tack on what we've been looking at the last few weeks, which has been focusing on premiums and inevitably players that go forward and their sidekicks, you know. So we had days where we were looking at the premium attackers and the midfielders, and we've also been looking at kind of, you know, the Jota and Greenwood type characters. Now we're looking at the defenses, and we're going to see which defenses we think we should be looking to get into our FPL teams, who should be we be investing in. And that's particularly interesting because we've got quite a few fixture shifts coming up. So there's an awful lot of questions coming in from the community on this particular aspect. But like every podcast, we're going to start this one with the game week reviews.
So yeah, as the guest, 63 this week, talk us through it. What did you do and how did you get on?
Yeah, I think it was fairly a decent enough score. So what I did was I had Antonio, but I got Antonio late into the season. So I didn't have much of value tied in him. So I tried to make a move to Bamford, which actually got me 5 points. That was an assist. I can gladly take that and run away. And I actually benched Benrahma for Trent. And of course, Trent didn't play and I got some jammy points from there on the bench. So that's 10 points. And
oh, nice.
Of course, Livramento will go on to keep a clean sheet against Man City. So kind of burnt by Wolves' defense. We all thought they are probably going to do well against Brentford. But then, of course, at least I'm glad that I didn't double up. White was another great one. I always target a score of 60 plus in a normal game week like this, and it's fairly above the margin, so it's all good for me. Yeah.
Cool. And how are you doing this season overall? You said you didn't have Antonio until a little bit late, so I'm guessing you're little bit below where you want to be.
Yeah, I think I always start slow, and that has been the trend this season as well. So I'm sitting around in the 1.3 million mark. Of course, it's not worrisome because I always start slow. So it's a bit of a catch up. And so, yeah, it's going to be a crucial few weeks ahead for me and my team. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's not where you want to be, but always good if you're chilled about it rather than panicking, that's for sure. Anthony, you're next. I think we're actually tied this week. But yeah, I've got you next in the list here. 65 for you.
Yeah, Tom, indeed. 65 points, which is absolutely fine. I guess I'm still kind of reeling from the wildcard disaster and trying to work things out. And so my two free transfers this week kind of reflect some of the mistakes that I made and what I had to fix. So Bruno moved to Salah, Kane moved to Ronaldo. Both of those came in, both of those scored. I captained Salah, thankfully, as I would have been massacred if I hadn't. So his 12 points were doubled. He was the highest scorer in my team. I didn't do any of the further transfers I'd considered. I think on the last pod, I was saying I had my two free transfers and I was considering as much as a mini wildcard minus 8. which would have basically found a way to get Trent Alexander-Arnold into my team. To be perfectly honest with you, Tom, I really, really would have done it, except that I was just away for the weekend. I had a graduation in the Netherlands, and it was just like, I can't think about this. I can't process it. So I just did the two transfers to get the premiums in. I had my captaincy sorted, and I could sleep, you know, soundly knowing that I just hadn't overthought things. And I just avoided doing it. So thankfully that worked out for the better. So I ended up with a 150K green arrow thanks to that 65 pointer, bringing me now to about 750K in the world. I guess in the context of where I was in about game week two, this is very annoying, but in the context of, you know, where I could have been or where I even have been in like game week four and stuff like that, this feels like a pretty good result. So all in all, we'll just keep plowing forward, very small steps forward, and hopefully I don't have an injury nightmare with the kind of all the players that I have now flagged. Ayling and Rafinha are flagged. And then it's kind of just general problems with some players who I just don't feel like I want anymore. Benrahma, Jota. Benrahma scored, I know, but I still feel this way. Not for this current game week, but it's just kind of, exactly. It's all Benrahma goals, Rajami. They don't actually exist in a real world, as I've discussed before, but at least I got something for getting Benrahma in, conforming with you lot with my wild card. So that was something at least. And it's nice to see that Shaw is falling out of the template as well. So slowly but surely, my template renegading is coming to pass.
Buying Salah and then captaining him. Who knew that that would be the key to game?
Yeah.
Patron FPL, of insight right there.
Yeah, FPL Viking does a mini league update, and I was I was credited as being the second best, you know, transfer in this week, and it was because I brought in Salah into my team and captain. I was like, I was like, this is not deserved, but okay. Yeah.
So I Jimmy those sort of prizes. And I'm lost 65 points as well. I rolled my free transfer. I kept Antonio, but I'm a bit surprised I came away with a green arrow simply because I had no goalkeeper and Backman was sensationally dropped. And I think he had a knee injury, but the Athletic later said he'd been dropped. So in 10 men, because I foolishly went for Steer because he would play Martinez's games when he's on quarantine in game week 8 and game week 12 over Foster. Felt super stupid. And I've now got a goalkeeper problem to fix, which is quite unwelcome. I needed all three subs this week as well, which annoyingly meant I had a 0-point defender coming on in the shape of Brandon Williams, along with having another 0-point defender in Cody. You know, Shaw blanked, Sampley laughed about, Jota blanked, 3 0-pointers, but you know, Salah captaincy obviously doing the business, Benrahma with that amazing shot from the edge of the area, which was definitely on target, 100% on target, flying in for that massive screamer. Dennis, Ronaldo and Christensen all getting sixes. So limped to 65 and a fairly decent recent green arrow from 325K to 265K. Not amazing, but still good enough, really, for where I am. And some objectives and objective reminders do this every week just to make sure that we are keeping to what we said we do at the start of the season when we're not letting our wild impulses lead us astray. Anthony, I think you've done okay here, especially because you've brought in the captain of the herd or the algos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I captained with the herd and that worked out quite well because I sat a captaincy, and that was of course my first objective, and I have achieved that happily, thankfully, I think, more than anything. Transfers, one of the things that I said was that don't be afraid to transfer out elite players if they've dropped off, and I transferred out both Kane and Bruno this week, so I think I have passed that one with flying colours as well this week. In terms of timings, I did not make my transfers late on a Friday night or a Saturday morning. I did them early in the week before anything could happen. I think even before Champions League games had happened, and that isn't necessarily advisable, but I did it early. And in terms of playstyle as well, I'd said max 10 hits in total in the season and max one hit in the first 5 game weeks. We've had the first 5 game weeks. I took no hits so far. So I guess I've graduated from that particular objective, leaving me now with 4, having started with what we kind of call like 4.75. So pretty good.
Yeah, mortarboard in the air for that one. For me, captaincy, do what Mikel's captain algorithm told him to do every week. Yeah, did it. Salah, transfers on 50 situation at the hit, no transfers this week. And the game transfers, take a chance on form, the woolly one. But again, no transfers this week. Maybe something to think about for next week, but maybe not. Maybe I will kick the can down the road once more and more on that later. So yeah, do you have any kind of objectives or things that you do over the course of seasons or perhaps just this season?
Yeah, I think I had 2 things for this particular season. Of course, last season I ended with a decent rank of 20K, but then captaincy really brought my rank down because I was kind of looking into a lot of against opponent statistics and too much into dwelling into those areas of
Yeah, I feel you.
which is quite not the right way to do things. So this season, I decided to do majorly stick the captaincy with the premium options that tend to do well. But of course, trying to keep fixture in front mostly backed up by stats. So that was the reason I brought Ronaldo in and captained him in game week 4. That worked out pretty, really well. And that's the same case with Salah in front of the home. I think it's been going well so far. And also, another thing is in terms of short-term transfer moves. Don't move in a player just for a 1 week or a 2 week or transfer. I made that mistake by bringing in Kane and dropping Salah out in game week 3. It didn't work well, just like how it went for Antony. It was painful to see him take the penalty.
Don't talk about it.
I, in fact, moved Salah to Sar, and then I moved a striker to Kane, and it was this nightmare. It was horrible. And yeah, so I did the mistake again. So I hope to not repeat that in the due course of the season. Yeah, those two are the main ones. Yeah.
Fair play. Sound very, very sensible. All right, Min League update before we go on to the market forces then. Our Min League is 2IP, 4-3T. And this week, the top man is still Ryan Quinn. He has, of course, been there for the last couple of weeks. He got 67 points this week, Salah captaincy. He was pretty much Salah captain throughout, except for one man who did have a bit of a fall, as we'll talk about in just a second. But yeah, Ryan's ahead in the league by about 14 points over in second, Andrew Ferguson. I assume that's not Fergie from the hub. And now that's a team. He's up to second from 21st with a 77 pointer this week. Salah again doing the business as his captain. In third as well, another big riser. In fact, no, between 3 and 6, perhaps a testament to how bunched up we've all been. These are all new people in the top 10 who have come there from the 20s and 30s. So in third, King Creed, the big Lewandowski, 76. In fourth, Naomi Nishimura, Gnomes FC, 72. In fifth, Carl Josephson, who actually tweeted me to say he was coming after Ryan on Twitter, 75 this week. In sixth, Roy's 11, Taxman, up from 38th, all the way to sixth of 75 this week. Poor old Boris Stojkovic bears the brunt of all these people going forward. So he only got 54 this week and went for the bold decision to captain Jota. And it must have been distraught, annoyed, angry, as we all do get watching Jota play. But yeah, just 54 for him. And that sees him drop off a little bit. New entry to the league in eighth, Ryan Mackie, who wildcarded this week for an 80. And finally rounding off the top 10, three people actually joined ninth. So Teja Adavi, the sinking Dutchman, I should say, 67 points. Carl Chin, pure X vibes, an 84. And Benarama, Josh M, 81 points. So well done for everybody. Enviable progress indeed. Right, market forces, Anthony. This is a section where we speak about the movers and shakers. It's interesting to see what you think as well, so yeah, about what's going on.
Yeah, so in terms of movers, it's actually quite interesting because it's the person who we were talking about as one of the most transferred out last week, and he's now the most transferred in player this week. That's, of course, Mikel Antonio, who after 1.7 million transfer or net transfers out last week, ended up falling by 0.1 in price. I think we would have all expected him to fall by a little bit more than that, but that's the way it went for him. So at 7.9 million, 227,000 people have deigned to bring him back into their sides. He's closely followed by Cristiano Ronaldo as the second most transferred in player. After that, then, it's kind of a smattering with Sar and Benrahma, popular amongst the midfielders, with about 190k transfers in each. And they're matched pretty much by Alassane Maximan, who has 183,000 transfers in and has ghosted his way, in my opinion anyway, to 4 returns so far this season, just as Newcastle turned towards some decent fixtures. And he kind of presents something akin to something like value if you really want to buy into that Newcastle side at 6.7 million, just because he seems to be the one who seems to be getting the points. But still, I feel like there are so many better options in that area that the amount of attention he's getting from managers is maybe concerning, to say the least. Demarai Gray is kind of the only other notable transfer in terms of midfielders, 135,000 transfers in, about the same as Marcus Alonso, who has 131,000 transfers in and is now 5.7. So he's just slowly but surely rising away there, 5 consecutive starts, and he'll obviously be part of our discussion in the later part of the pod. So yeah, do you have any thoughts on those popular transfers in? I think in particular, it's interesting to see Sar and Benrahma and Gray being as popular as they are.
Yeah, I think managers are trying to pop off Benrahma and bring in Sar in. And of course, Sar presents a very good short-term move. Those, their next two fixtures are actually really good. They play Leeds and Newcastle United in the next two. So I think Sar is definitely a very decent enough option. And Benrahma too has been getting all of these jammy goals. I think that doesn't really exist in the normal world. Yeah, that also makes that Antonio is being bought back in. So it's clearly now a case of owning one rather than both of them, now that we have a lot of other options to cover. Gray is someone is concerning, considering Everton have lost Richarlison and Aspil for the next 3 weeks. I don't see who's gonna be at the end of finishing of those chances. So yeah, those sum up. Alonso someone we can have a detailed chat about in the...
Yeah, I guess, and then going to those transfers out, indeed, Richarlison, who you just mentioned, is the most transferred out player so far at the moment with about 220k transfers out. He's 7.5, maybe he'll find his way to 7.4, maybe it'll be 7.3, even though he has nowhere near as many owners as Antonio, because that's just the way the prices roll. Ferran Torres is the second most transferred out player at the moment, about 167k transfers out. That's a kind of interesting one, because I think, if anything, of course, he didn't really get much of a run out at the weekend, but at the same time, you're kind of thinking, you know, he's probably going to start the next one. So it seems a little bit of a rush to get him out, considering he has proven himself to be a pretty interesting focal point in that City side. After that, then, there's a real smattering of players who have about 100,000 transfers out. Trent Alexander-Arnold is one of those. Bruno Fernandes is at 142k transfers out. And then you've got Danny Ings, Calvert-Lewin. Those two moves kind of seem kind of correctional at this point. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin has been ruled out for a period. But with Ings, it kind of feels very correctional, and that I'm surprised there are that many teams or that many managers who are as active as this who are transferring him out at this point. A lot of those are kind of quite sensical transfers out, but the Torres one, Surya, do you share my thoughts that it seems a little bit rash to be hitting him out of his side after, you know, one disappointment?
Yeah, I think so. But the short-term fixtures or the next two games kind of, I think, convinces managers to push him out. But of course, okay. Really play well in a big game. They go out all guns blazing, and of course, they did draw against Southampton side, and I think they'll go all out against in the next game that they play. So I think it's a bit rash. Yeah.
So I agree with you on that. Like, we're not really going to be getting into City players in too much detail, certainly from an attacking perspective in this pod. So might as well just, like, focus on them slightly here. And that, you know, a Chelsea game and a Liverpool game, yes, both away, tough fixtures in and of themselves. But these are the games that a champion, you know, a team that hopes to be champions needs to win. Like, these are probably their two main title contenders. And the idea that Ferran Torres, who seems to be their main man in terms of an attacking threat, like, this is where he's meant to be good. You know, this is why you bought him. And it's quite interesting to me that people are kind of bailing on him now.
Yeah, we'll see later on, because I was thinking I might bail on him. We'll see. I've got one more thing to add here, which I think is quite interesting, is that Mikel Antonio, season long, is the second most transferred in player of all. 2.6 million transfers in overall for him, behind, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, who's been bought in by 3.6 million people overall, at any point during the season, that is. And he's also the second most sold player all season as well, which just shows what a yo-yo his ownership is, and perhaps how fickle the FPL manager base can be. I'm still a bit surprised at that, but there you go. All right, we'll take a quick break there and move on to the main topic in just a second.
Who got the assist?
So we're back, and it's into the main topic this week. And as Anthony mentioned earlier on, last few weeks we've kind of really focusing on the attack, or at least things which are kind of about the more exciting side, perhaps, of our teams. Talking about that was fairly inevitable. But this week, I think it felt natural to us to look at the back a little bit, especially after seeing defensive behemoths City, Chelsea and Liverpool come through with clean sheets. Turn the spotlight, I suppose, back on that defence and thinking about how we invest at the back. If FPL points are the kingpin stat, I suppose, here's the top 10-ish players in FPL at the moment. There's actually 12 due to ties, but top is Salah with 50. In second, joint second actually, is Antonio and Benrahma with 39. In fourth, it's Alonso. Which is a bit strange. In joint fifth, it's Trent and Diaz. And in seventh, joint seventh, that is, Rudiger, Van Dijk, Alisson, Pogba, Bruno, and Greenwood with 33. So you've got one goalkeeper, five defenders, five mids, one forward, all in the top 10 in terms of FPL points scored so far this season. And that kind of heightens why, you know, we've looked at the attack, we've looked at the midfield in particular, but now why we should look at defenders as well, because they are kind of making an impact in teams, perhaps more quietly than other positions, but still nonetheless are having impacts on their FPL fortunes. We speak about literal defenders, I think, here for the most part, despite my own goalkeeper perils, but we will touch on the men between the sticks as well, of course. This is obviously quite an interesting sort of area as well. There's lots of questions from the community about this, which we'll go through as we kind of speak through the kind of questions that we see. That's Dread FPL, the dude Morpheus, aka Morpheus Fire, FPL rookie, Neelut Palam Tiwari asked us questions about this, and we'll touch on their questions as we go throughout. So the importance of defence is where we kind of start here. And for me, I guess historically, it's always been about investment, hence my deliberate use of that word when it comes to this episode's sort of central question, where should we invest at the back? Perhaps I shouldn't be, and maybe I should be more open to chopping and changing at the back. But transfers, where I'm concerned, almost always focus on the kind of, you know, bright, shiny, new attacking assets. Unless it's kind of enforced, I won't mess around with my defence too much. I'll be far more likely to give a defender time and space versus an attacking option where my feet get far itchier, I guess. And that's to my detriment too. So last season, famously overlooking Dallas the whole year. So for me, I guess I'll always invest in defenders. And to extend the metaphor, I'll always be more open to trading attackers at the whim of the weekly events, I suppose. I mean, Soya, what's your view here? How do you kind of look at defenders in your FPL team?
Defense is something that I invest in a long-term basis. But then, of course, when the opportunity rises, I think defense offers a lot of value. Considering a defender like Stuart Dallas or someone like Trent or someone like when you double up on Robertson, could offer the same 180, 190, 200 points. Of course, making defensive moves is kind of boring, but then you get a lot of points and you get a lot of stability as well in terms of defensive assets. You bring them in, have for a good fixture run, and I think you're sorted in terms of defensive stability of your FPL team. So I always value that, and it's okay to make the move if the defensive asset fails, as in this case of Luke Shaw not doing well as we expected. We all thought he was going to be a nailed on a season-long asset. I don't think that's going to be the case. It's misfiring pretty badly. A lot of options opening up, and it's okay to hop off one premium defender to another one and get that stability back in your defense.
Yeah, it's interesting the way you said there, Surya, that, you know, the boring moves tend to be defensive moves. It's kind of interesting that that's, I think, something that almost every FPL manager would agree with kind of almost naturally. And yet, you know, getting points isn't all that boring. And I know we can't necessarily say that, you know, what has happened so far this season is, you know, in some way indicative of what's to come in this season. But it is quite interesting to just look at FPL points scored across the league and kind of just see how defenders have done so far. So there's actually a very few players in the league right now have scored 30 plus points. Of those, though, 6 of them are defenders, 7 of them are midfielders, and just 1 forward has got more than 30 points so far this season. That's, of course, Antonio. And, you know, what does that say? It kind of tells us that, you know, dependable points so far this season have come out of defense, even if it hasn't come, they haven't come in necessarily in a very explosive manner. Whereas forwards, who I think we've given an awful lot of time and thought to, have been generally disappointing. Now, of course, these points ideas are kind of skewed because the likes of Ronaldo, for example, haven't quite got to 30 points yet because he came in late. You could say the same for Lukaku. But broadly, I think it is quite interesting to see just how dependably defenders have been getting in the points. When you think about this, you know, what is now the 30 points club so far, those 6 defenders, 4 of those are premium. So they're exactly the type of players that we'd be looking at. Diaz, TAA, Virgil van Dijk, and Cancelo. And TAA, noteworthy, I guess, is that he's in this 30 point club in spite of the fact that he didn't play one of the games, which is not the same for all the rest of them. All the rest of that kind of, you know, top bracket have played all of the games so far, if not all of the minutes. Alonso is, of course, the top scoring defender, though. The question with him, of course, for all of us is he too good to be dropped, or is he just making good use of time where Chilwell has been injured? And whilst at the end of the day, he has been good from an FPL perspective, we've seen before that Tuchel doesn't necessarily trust him in big games. He wasn't favored last season, all the time at least. And it's kind of hard to know exactly what's going to happen with him. So he's not all that interesting. So you maybe dig into these numbers a little bit more. It's quite interesting to me as well that 3 of the top 5 defenders haven't scored. So they haven't necessarily got there powered by just a goal that just happened to occur in the first few weeks. Diaz, TAA, and Virgil van Dijk are those ones. And none of the top scoring defenders right now have more than 2 goal involvements. Just Alonso, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Shane Duffy, Cresswell, and you know, a few. They're the only ones really who have 2 goal involvements that are worth talking about in that third, you know, in that kind of top 20 defenders. And that's kind of all those top 20 defenders are kind of 21 points and more. Christensen and Henry from Brentford are kind of your bottom of this bracket, kind of following upwards from there. Only 1 defender right now has an XA of over 1.0. And I guess this is indicative of a player you can trust all the way. And no surprise, that's Trent Alexander-Arnold. And his XA is closer to 2.5. So it just tells you just how much better he is creatively than literally any defender in the league. And again, he didn't play 1 game. TAA is also top for bonus points for defenders. And then it's kind of just that elite domination, I guess. When you look at the top 20, so many of them come from top clubs. And then there's Brentford. And it's like, yeah, after that, it's kind of interesting. there's a smattering of other guys in there, but it is just so interesting for me to see that defensive points have been so predictably good so far. And, you know, we talk about the importance of defense here as a foundation to act from, but like, it's actually been powering teams who invested well in defense and just stuck with them in these early weeks. But I guess for all of us, for most of us anyway, those have been lost points so far. So it is quite interesting to see.
You're right. No, I think it's definitely fascinating to see how that's all sort of unfolded. And in years past, Nick and I were obviously extolling the virtues of big at the back. And it's fascinating this year it's actually come. And ironically, Nick's not on the pod anymore to go on about how he went on about big at the back in the past. Ah, I love it.
It's tough.
It's tough. It really is. I think that we're also going to have to just call a quick exemption on TAA here. I'm just going to assume, I mean, Anthony, I'm sure you'll get him at some point, but we've spoken about him so much on this podcast that I think we're just not worth bringing him in again. We know how great he is. Not worth it. But elsewhere, I mean, you just moved us on there, Anthony, a little bit towards kind of thinking about teams with investable defences. So we'll talk about kind of players, individuals, in just a bit, but in terms of teams, I guess, you know, as you said, there's Man City, there's Chelsea, and then you kind of end up looking at Brentford and thinking, wow, what's going on here? And Morpheus Fire asked if doubling up on both Man City and Chelsea defence are worth it from game week 8. I think Chelsea in particular have gotten a lot of interest recently. I think I might well be looking at double Chelsea from then at the back under Tuchel. 24 clean sheets, 18 goals conceded. So they've kept more clean sheets than goals have actually conceded. And 5 of those goals came against West Brom, of all teams, amazingly. 4th best expected clean sheets this season, just a shade ahead of Liverpool. No non-penalty goals conceded, just that Salah pen, but 4.68 worth of chances in terms of non-pen goals conceded. So an element of luck, perhaps, about Chelsea. But nonetheless, they have been, for a demonstrable period now, fairly solid under the new German manager. So, yeah, what do you think about Chelsea? I'm guessing they're kind of high up the list of investability. I mean, I've got Christensen. Do you have anyone you're looking to make any moves there?
That was an interesting question. If I were to double up on one of Chelsea or City defense, I would probably double up on Chelsea because Tuchel operates more in a stable fashion than Pep. I think Pep might change the back line too much for a liking, and it doesn't go well really most of the times. But the defensive stability is there in terms of Chelsea's defense. Of course, the main one that's nailed on is Rudiger. Of course, Rudiger and Lukaku are the only ones at the moment who are rotation proof in Tuchel's lineup. The other one that's really interesting in my eyes is Reece James. Of course, he missed out this week, but I think Tuchel prefers him in the games that that are easier in terms of defensive wherein he goes, he stays higher up the pitch and starts crossing in the ball more to Lukaku, to his liking, because Lukaku is someone who really likes the ball being crossed to him. So it's quite a gamble to have Reece James all through. But with the fixtures turning, I feel he's going to start a vast majority of the games. And coming back with Alonso as an assert, I still feel Chilwell was preferred a lot in the bigger games. And if Aspie is preferred over Reece James in bigger games, I think the same principle goes with Chilwell being preferred over Alonso, at least in the bigger games. So I think if I had to pick two Chelsea defenders, it should be Rudiger first and Reece James second.
Sorry, if you had a choice here, would you look to double up on one of the City or Chelsea defenses, or would you just split yourself and get one from each?
I'm more inclined to doubling up on Chelsea's defense. I'm pretty not sure. You see, Cancelo has started all 5 games. He's played all of the minutes. But I for sure know for a fact that if I bring him in, then I think that's not going to go.
Zinchenko will start straight away.
Appear out of nowhere. And Walker too hasn't been on his level best over the years, over the last few games. And Laporte missing out and Ake coming in. So it doesn't give me confidence of having Diaz as well. So I might as well double up on the two of the Chelsea guys. And
Yeah, I prefer to do that.
That's what my thinking is.
So anyway, I mean, we'll come on to the players in just a bit because obviously we've got quite a lot to go into there. But on a team level, Man City have obviously the one to really bring up. I mean, everyone is looking at Chelsea for obvious reasons. I mean, one of our friends who I'll mention later on, FPL Janino, he had Christensen and Rudiger. So he got 20 points coming in the last kind of 20 seconds, sneaky man. But Man City, their defence indisputably the best in the land. Maybe Chelsea have something to say about that. But records-wise, just 31 shots conceded so far this season. That's 11 fewer than the nearest club, Wolves. shockingly. 19 conceded in the box, 2 big chances conceded, and 5 shots on targets conceded so far. So 1 shot on target conceded per game, which is just absolutely crazy. So last week, they've averaged 19 clean sheets a season in over the last 3 years. There was that silly period last season between game week 11 and 21, but they kept 9 clean sheets in 11 games. And I think that that's probably going to happen soon. They've already started doing it, to be fair. But they've got a couple of tough games against Chelsea and Liverpool, which may kind of make you think, maybe not. But equally, I think that they are a really interesting case just because of the goalkeeper situation. Like Anthony said at the first pod, I think, this year, that Ederson was their highest scoring player and might as well treat him as a defender. And Dread FPL asked that as well. Is there merit in the goalkeeper instead? So he said, you know, is the premium goalkeeper actually the real silent assassin differential this year? I mean, I was looking at this before we came on the pod and I was just like, maybe I could just buy Ederson because I can afford to do it. I can
get Gallagher in.
But I'm not sure I'll do it. But I'm just putting it out there because of how good City's defence are. And if we are saying about investments, then maybe that's one worth floating.
I'll jump in on you on this, Tom, because like the thing what's interesting about it, yes, you did know that Ederson did outscore all the City defenders last season. So it's definitely not an option to be scoffed at, as some may have done in preseason. And what he does is that it insulates against Pep Roulette in a way that even a Diaz can't do. And the issue in previous years, perhaps, was that you might have wanted to try and triple up on City. It feels less likely that that's going to occur this season, not necessarily because City are poor or because they haven't performed as well as we'd want so far, but because there's just so many other big names that we might want to get that our budget is going to be so stretched that it just doesn't feel like you're going to need that City triple up. There's an awful lot of teams that are operating right now with no City players. Very few, I would say, have 2 City players. And I can't imagine anyone who's looking to get a third in right now. So it kind of feels like getting Ederson in, it's your way to get into that City defense without having a problem. You can get into the Chelsea defense with a little bit more history and order. It's less unpredictable, at least, with Tuchel. It allows us to buy in with a little bit more confidence in a Rudiger-type character or indeed one of the other wing-backs if you really want to roll the dice a little bit. Yeah.
I think there definitely is a case for Ederson, that's for sure. So we'll go back later on. We've got a question on goalkeepers. A couple of other teams just to mention here quickly. So obviously Wolves. Wow. They conceded the same number of big chances in one game as between games 1 and 4 when they had much harder opposition to play against on paper. They simply couldn't handle Tony, could they? Surya, do you think it was a false positive in those first 4 games? Do you think Wolves kind of showed that their kind of true level against Brentford, or do you think that they had a bit of a blip? I mean, what do you make of the Wolves' defence so far? Because everybody was talking about how their defenders, you know, people were doubling up left, right and centre, and Martial, Semedo. What's your view on them?
Yeah, I think there's 2 sides to this coin. As in, of course, the numbers were really great. And in fact, it wasn't against easier oppositions. It was against really good teams. And that made people move to a lot of Wolves defenders in Game Week 4. And then that proceeded into Game Week 5 as well. But then I felt Wolves were a little more attacking, a little more loose at the back, trying to attack more against Brentford. I think they probably tried to undervalue Brentford as an attacking unit. So that I felt that that's what happened. I think they really undermined Brentford as an attacking team, and they paid the price for it. I think it was a repeat of Game Week 1 against Arsenal. Didn't really expect Brentford to be so stable at the back and try to hit them whenever they had the chance. And that's what preceded against Wolves too. I think the lesson would have been learned because they fairly know how to defend. Because if not that's the case, they couldn't have conceded just 3 goals against some 3 amazing oppositions in the first 3 games and then keep a clean sheet in Game Week 4. So I think it should have been a one-off. So I think they should be back to their defensive stability. I'm not assuring that it will translate into a lot of clean sheets and attacking returns, but still, I think it is one-off.
It's interesting. I've kind of looked into this Wolves thing a little bit too. And I guess I was beating the drum for Cody after the first 3 games and kind of continue to still do. I guess I follow that up and put him into my wildcard team. And I think I'm not panicked by one result. I think these things happen, I guess, is the easy way to write it off. And I feel like I can. Number one with that Wolves defense, they do seem to keep playing the same defense. We've had that Semedo, Kilman, Cody, Sice, Martial, 5-man defense slash three-man defence with two wing-backs, whatever you want to call it, pretty consistently there up till now. I suspect that won't necessarily stay the same, and I'd be quite concerned as a Marcel owner because he just kind of has that ready-made replacement there who's got back his fitness. But at the same time, I kind of feel like this particular game, yeah, Tony was a problem, as you noted, Tom. They were just in disarray after they went behind, and I think an awful lot of their numbers looked poor because of like this. Obviously, it was a fairly short period where both of the goals were conceded, but like there was an awful lot of chances conceded in this very short period of time. And it was just kind of Tony just had this good run and just kind of really got going. He had two well-taken goals that were ruled out for offside as well, just to kind of add to kind of just how well he was doing. And even, you know, the first goal, like, it was a really silly penalty to give away. The second one, Kilman, you know, in another world probably would have made that tackle on Tony. It just wasn't their day and it went wrong. One thing I would say about what Siri said about how those early results were against good teams, I think we can maybe be a little bit revisionist about how promising those results were when we really think back to it. Like, the, you know, the Leicester game, like, Leicester haven't actually proven to be all that good in attack at all so far this season. Spurs, ditto. So, albeit they didn't get clean sheets in those games, they gave us hope. I think now you're kind of thinking, really? You're one of the few, like, okay, Leicester and Spurs haven't exactly been prolific and they conceded to them. So it's not as promising as we thought it was, I guess, is what I would say. It's not putting me off. But overall, I think that Wolves defence is not something you should be panicked about. They have a good fixture run coming up. You bought them because you thought they might get, let's say, two clean sheets in five. And, you know, you didn't really care who those two clean sheets were going to come against. And the fact that they didn't come against newly promoted Brentford, who have been surprisingly good so far this season by, you know, any metric you look at, shouldn't necessarily make you fear.
Yeah, maybe it rubs up against the idea of investment, doesn't it, at the back?
Yes.
And thinking, you know what, actually, the investment that I'm making here isn't, you know, a short-term one, it's a long-term one. And I think that's probably what is what that kind of pushes at. People kind of think, oh, I've made a mistake with the Wolves' defence. Well, maybe you have. We can't be making too many assertions at the beginning, but, you know, things could change. And you mentioned Brentford there, a second from bottom for actually conceding an expected clean sheets. What's going on? We don't know. The goalkeeper, perhaps, he's got one of the highest save percentages in terms of shots on target this season. None of their defenders actually has attempts a shot on target so far. None of them. They've not played any of the top seven from last season yet. So maybe a bit of a perfect storm. But kicking with Wolves and moving into Brighton as well, a rookie FPL says they're kind of both quite hot and cold, you know? So if you had to invest in one, who would it be? Updating priors wise, a term beloved of Analytics FC, Brighton last season were defensively in the elite. Third fewest expected goals conceded, the third least big chance conceded, the third fewest shots on target conceded. You name it, ridiculously good defensive data. But only Duncan Veltman managed over 100 points with 12 and 10 clean sheets respectively. That consistency of clean sheets wasn't quite there. And what's really interesting is to mention your man Duffy here, Anthony. I'm going to mention him again later in the correspondence because, wow. So last season, to take one measure of defensive, obviously want to play out from the back and Duffy's an old school defender, but it's just amazing to see that Duffy's fourth for baseline bonus in defenders. And this is why last season Dunk averaged 3.15 clearances and 0.61 blocks per game last year. Duffy this season has managed 5.8 clearances per game, 1.2 blocks per game. He's just looking underpriced, isn't he? And as we didn't think he'd start the season, he seems pretty nailed in now. So the 4.3 looks pretty crazy. And also he's had the most shots in box of any defender apart from Van Dijk, which is just mad. I guess we're getting onto the single kind of defenders in themselves at the moment. We've kind of long known that there's a bit of a broad kind of split in typology of defenders. So I think there's two distinct types. There's the attack-minded defenders and there's defensive stalwarts. Repeating my Rudiger tip from a few weeks ago, I wish I followed up on that and didn't go with Christensen. Expected minutes is becoming more and more emphasised in defenders, but the exoticism of that attack-minded defender is always going to turn people's heads. I'm not too sure there's middle ground. Maybe there's one that I'm going to put forward in a little bit, but I don't think you have too many attacking centre-backs who are going to be ripping it up and getting assists and goals all over the place. Maybe if Sheffield United had stayed up and perfected their overlapping centre-backs, we might have the hybrid. A few options here. Let's leave out the 4.5s as we've got correspondence on that. But let's have a quick powwow on some of these lads, especially if we haven't accommodated a fixture shift. So in terms of the attack-minded defenders, I guess, we mentioned Alonso earlier on. Second for shots overall for Munster defenders, most shots on target. Anthony mentioned all these stats already, third for BPS, crucially started all the games, assist Alonso last game. I mean, Anthony, should we be looking at Alonso again? Is he one of those that we're just kind of overlooking because we're worried about Chilwell. I mean, he started the last few games. He looked very good against Spurs. Like, are you very surprised if he does get dumped by the new German manager?
I think I would be surprised if he got dumped. But the problem is, I guess, you've talked about investments. I don't necessarily, if I bring someone like him in, I really don't want him to become a problem, or I don't want to miss out on points against teams that you'd expect him to get a clean sheet against, because that's the game that Tuchel decides to give Chilwell a run out in to try and build up his fitness. Like, they need two left backs as the season goes on. They can't continue to just leave him out in the cold. Chelsea especially have, you know, some difficult Champions League games coming up. Like, they have two games against Juventus coming up in, before I think it was like game week 11 or game week 12. Like, they really have to kind of make sure that they have their best team, whatever Tuchel thinks that is, available for those games. And, you know, that may mean resting certain players, and Alonso may be one of those. And so just when there is what seems to be a much clearer, safer option in there in Rudiger, it just feels to me like there's no point trying to, you know, cut your cloth that little bit tighter and getting somebody like Christensen, because we've seen what can happen with that. And there's no point kind of taking risks beyond what we might want to do as well and getting in an Alonso or a James. It just feels like Rudiger kind of just fits in happily there at that 5.5, and you will probably get burnt at some point. He will eventually sit out because they do have a number of good centre-back options there. But at the same time, Rudiger kind of provides this presence on the ball and this ability that not all of the Chelsea defenders have, I think. And so I think with that in mind, and just his just general solidity and importance to that team, means that I feel like he's just that bit safer than most, which makes me just prefer to have him. As much as I love Alonso, and it was an FPL aspect, and he has been very good for season after season when he's had a chance in that team.
I think one question, I think, so you brought this up earlier on, was a question, but from Nilot Palam Tiwari, who asked about Shaw, is it time to sell him on? So he's second for XA, most crosses made, more than Trent, and positioning is excellent. A lot of his attempted chances now are passes rather than crosses. But I mean, you're both United fans. Anthony has long been a skeptic of Shaw, whereas Surya, where have you stood on Shaw, Surya? Was he one that you always thought was going to come to the fore this season?
I started the season especially after the run that he had in the Euros. I genuinely felt that Shaw was the season keeper, but then it didn't really work out, as in United still keep making those same defensive one or two defensive errors that leads to goals. There's these all freak goals that United concede that really kills the clean sheet potential, and he's not again up to there in terms of attacking returns. Of course, the stats I feel is slightly skewed as well, because he's there in a lot of corners, and those go into half chances, and as a United fan, I shouldn't be biased, but I don't see him being a big difference. Genuinely, I went with him just to make sure I don't fall behind you at the very, very beginning of the season, because it was quite scary. He had around close to 60% of ownership, and it does not run into points at all. But having said that, the next two games are kind of gives hope in terms of something as a parting gift from Shaw, I would say. So maybe I would hold for another 2 weeks. I think they play Aston Villa and then Everton are again kind of here and there. So I think beyond game week 7, I don't see holding Shaw to be a major thing.
Yeah, this is it. I think these are actually the two game weeks that I might even be fearful, having had no Shaw since game week 1. Never wanted him, never thought he was going to be good. I'm very delighted with how it's gone so far. It's not surprising to me at all. United don't play with any like defensive midfielders. There's no cover for that defence. Ole is trying to put too many players into attack. It's great. It's fun to watch when it works. But, you know, this kind of, how does it work between, how do you get the ball from defence to attack? You just give it to Bruno, you give it to Shaw, and then magical things occur. And then somebody gets the ball in the final third. And like that means then if they get attacked on the counter-attack, it's a disaster. And like the Newcastle game is a perfect example of it. Even what happened against Young Boys, because they kept Ronaldo on the pitch and just allowed them to be continually slaughtered, was a good example of it. It's going to keep going. It's going to keep happening. And as you say, Surya, the thing is that while Shaw does get forward, and sure, you know, he's on the ball a lot, and sure, he played good for England a few times, but the fact of the matter is that he just doesn't create enough high quality chances to make him an essential. Like, he's not someone who creates like Robertson or or even Cancelo level of chances in terms of their quality. A lot of them are just, you know, basically fake chances created through corners and stuff. And it's just like, you know, it's lottery stuff. Every single time he just happens to buy an awful lot of tickets to the lottery. And so it will come off right occasionally. Watch him get two assists this weekend, a clean sheet and a 16 point haul or something after I've said this. But it is just a little bit frustrating to have him. And I can kind of see why you wouldn't. I'd much rather have, and I think I'll advance us on with this, someone like a Cancelo character in my team. And it's like, okay, Cancelo offers all of that attacking threat, except the numbers are kind of more, you know, they're higher value lottery tickets that you buy with Cancelo. And the thing is as well, he actually has a better defense there that, you know, operates in a system, and it means that it just tends to work out a little bit better. And it's like, sure, Cancelo might not play two games in 10, but at least you kind of at least you have a wilder ride where you might have some good returns. Or you could just go for, and I would probably prefer the more defensive stalwart type character in that City defense, a Diaz, not necessarily a Laporte, because of the whole entire Laporte Stones psychodrama that seems to be continuing to play out there with Pep. I just would rather avoid that and stick to Diaz because of that. But Cancelo, for me, far better than Shaw as an FPL prospect.
I agree with that. One of the fun things that I found in my stats look up for this, I mean, we are five game weeks in, so we'll start to do this a little bit more. But Cancelo is the most unlucky defender so far this season in terms of expected goal involvement. Minus 1.18 XGI, he's short. Equal XA per game with Robertson. As you mentioned, there is a Zinchenko factor where there could be a little bit of rotation. But one thing I did notice is that he's also got ridiculous bonus monster potential. So this year, he's tracking a little bit differently than he was last year. He's actually had so far the most successful passes in the opposition half and the final third of any player thus far this season. So if we do keep clean sheet, he does do any have any sort of goal involvement, I think that he could be well up there in terms of the bonus. So I really like the idea of going with Cancelo, that's for sure.
Yeah, a small point to add maybe on that, Tom, before you move us on, is that he is also the top in terms of just expected points for defenders so far this season. If you look on the Fantasy Football Hubs tables there, they have him as high as there with 30.3. He's the only defender actually who would have expected to have over 30 points so far this season, despite the fact that there is, as I said, a half dozen who've actually made it there.
Yeah, fair play. Any other members of this attack-minded defender clan that have come to mind for you as being of worth interest, worth mentioning here?
I don't really think we lost for options here. As in, we do have a couple of players like Sufal who's really attacking, but then the West Ham defense doesn't call for stability that we really see them as an FPL asset. I saw Anthony have him in his team, have Sufal in his team yet. I don't think he's fairly happy with him in his team, to be fair. But that's the case. We used to have Eiling and Dallas last season. Leeds are again in misery this season. Semedo calls for an interesting case. He did have all of these good attacking numbers. And of course, his last season numbers, per 90 numbers, have improved drastically this season. And he's kind of showing what the talent he actually has in him. But then, it do they really match the premium ones? I don't think so. Earlier, we used to have Dallas was actually matching the premium. Actually, he went on to be the most scoring defender last season. So we don't this season. There is kind of a gap between the premium defenders and the defenders from the rest of the 14. Tierney could be a long shot.
Wow, have we redescended to choosing Arsenal defenders?
I just like ribbing Arsenal. That's worth doing. If he doesn't get injured, I can see where you're coming from. He'd be the one that I'd have picked as well.
And maybe I have Ben White in my team, and I'm fairly comfortable having him rather than Kieran Tierney, because Tierney, I think it was one of the blank game weeks last season. He went on to do two assists. He got a 15-point haul in game week 8. And a lot was spoken on him, and I think that's the last thing he made a major FPL impact. So he's too much of an uncertainty to be considered as an FPL asset. So that's the reason I don't see any more of attacking-minded assets that are from a stabler team giving consistent points.
That Tierney haul is a classic of an availability heuristic, isn't it, Tom? That, you know, it's just, we all think of that. Oh, Tierney's good in attack because that one time
I had Rob Holden that week who assisted Tierney, so I got my 11 points. So I was very happy with that. And I think that you're both right, and I think that attacking minded defenders, it's definitely one of those, it always catches the eye. And you've got lots of Reguilon, you've got lots of Crespo, we haven't mentioned Luca Dean as well. Some podcaster tipped him at the start of the season as being well worth your while. No, I'm hoping no one remembers that.
Yeah, that same podcaster is now laughing at the owners who still have him. But I did at one point.
But I think the defensive stalwarts, which I also have said this season maybe worth looking at, are definitely worth mentioning. Just a general point. I mean, you know, these are the players like Rudiger, like Christensen, Diaz, Laporte, or whatever. They're slightly less sexy, a slightly less value than the lads on the flanks, but their expected minutes are superior over the course of the season. But actually, the gold threat from central defenders is actually best in the wingbacks. So Van Dijk has got more shots than any other defender apart from Duffy, for example. And last year's top 10 for XG amongst defenders, at 7 were centre-backs. Trent and Chilwell were actually the top two, though. All in all, you're looking at a smaller ceiling, of course, like the 10-plus Rudiger Hall. That's really rare. You know, the 15-pointer, and that's a kind of, you know, dreamland territory. And stone explosions are kind of, you know, once-in-a-lifetime sorts of things. And normally your ceiling is 6-7 points. But if we're looking at long-term investment rather than a boom-and-bust sort of character, these sort of guys, the Rudigers, the Van Dijks, the Diazes of this world, are the players who got the expected minutes, demonstrably trusted by their managers to be that man in the field, are worth mentioning. I said earlier on, there's not too many hybrids in terms of being an attack-minded player as well as a defensive stalwart. For 6 million, I think there is one. That's Chelsea captain Azpilicueta. So he played wing-back against Spurs, the surprise no-show for James. Trust in those games, perhaps, to play that sort of role, but normally kind of in the free at the back, like was under Conte. And since the German manager has joined Chelsea, Azpilicueta has played more minutes than any other player. And what's interesting about Azpilicueta is that versatility. So in attacking sense, last season, he actually created the third most chances for Chelsea. And he still sits decently in the BPS. I mean, he always used to say, you know, he comes onto the pitch with a bonus point in hand. Could he be being phased out finally? We don't know. But I mean, him and Rudiger are both kind of, you know, engaged in contract chats at the moment. He's 0.5 million more than Rudiger, so I can see why you go for Rudiger. But Azpilicueta, one of those sort of captains on the field or one of those kind of coaches on the field, could be one that I mentioned there as being one who would intersect that sort of defensive stalwart and attack-minded defender sort of divide. What do you guys think about these sort of stalwarts? I'm a little bit boring, but equally, I'm guessing, you know, the likes of Diaz is high up your list in terms of buying him.
I think when you own these kind of defensive stalwarts for a long, prolonged period of time, they do really match the attacking returns of the fullback, the flashy ones. Take, for instance, Lewis Dunk as an example. He does his job. He gets those 5-6 header goals right through the season. That the same thing that happens with Rudiger. No one expected him to score against Spurs, but then you have him mainly as a defensive cover, get those 6-7 clean sheet points in your bag, and that attacking goal or that rare attacking assist, maybe from Fluke or corner or something, that will also eventually happen. This bodes well for managers who want to have them for a prolonged period of time and not hop on and off these premium defensive assets. And that's the case of most of the managers who actually look to go big at the back. So you tend to invest more and tend to give them the confidence of having them in your team. So you might not know which team they will score, but probably they'll eventually end up matching what these fullbacks give. Of course, it's not pleasing on the eye, but then you don't have to be pleasing to get FPL points. So I think they do the job in my eyes. And and Aspie is a great show. He's the club captain. He seems to be the wing back in the bigger games, and he seems to be shifting between Christensen for that right centre back spot in games against bigger opposition. So, but then having said the case, 0.5 cheaper Rudiger, I would definitely go Rudiger. That's my thought process. Yeah.
Actually, it's interesting you say that, Surya, because you're kind of actually coming at this from the same angle I am. I think there's an awful lot to be said for these defensive stalwarts over the course of a season-long projection. The only exception to that, really, and I hate to mention him because we're barred, but is Trent Alexander-Arnold. But aside from that, I do feel like your defensive stalwarts should be able to match them. And I think that's a distinguishing factor this season more than ever, is that we do have three teams who I think it's reasonable to suggest could get between 17 and 20 clean sheets, for example, you know, so in and around a clean sheet every other game. And we've seen in previous seasons that when you have a defender, a centre-back, for example, who plays every single week in a team that does gets that many clean sheets, who's good for bonuses and who will pop up with the odd goal and probably fluke the odd assist because they headed the ball the wrong direction, things will go in their favour. And like a classic example of that is Virgil van Dijk, who is a former 200 club member, a 200 club alum, if you will, from a few years ago. And he followed that up with 178 points in the season Liverpool won the title 2019-20. And of course, that was the COVID season. They weren't particularly good in Project Restart because they pretty much had the league wrapped up. Would he have been a 200 club member again if they'd been just continuing their momentum? Perhaps. He's a good example of what may happen this year with your Diaz, who didn't get anywhere near that last year, but you know could just add to it. But there's nothing to say that you know a few more clean sheets going City's way, him getting a few more goals, which he is, I stand by, capable of getting. And then you could say the same for Rudiger, who has proven himself already this season and even last year under Tuchel to be a goal threat, who will pick up clean sheets. The way that Chelsea play their three-man defence means that there's kind of one kind of like anchor defender in there, tends to be either Christensen or Silva. And the likes of Aspie, the likes of Rudiger are allowed to kind of get forward that little bit more, but maybe pass forward that little bit more. They're relied upon to be that little bit more creative. It may return one or two assists in the season. It's not a big number, but it's just a little bit that just helps them to tick towards, you know, it gets them another 3 points, obviously, for the assist, gives them a chance of getting bonuses. It might be another five. And this is kind of, you know, the difference that makes a 200 club member. And I think this season we may have two, let's say, centre backs make it to the 200 club or be in and around it. That means that they are a particularly good pick. And as you say, Surya, it isn't going to come in a sexy way. It's not going to come with big explosive returns. It's going to be six after six with a few eights and a few and a freak 11, 12, 15 tossed in that'll power them there. But they will keep up with most of those kind of attack-minded defenders, with the exception of Trent, as I said, and perhaps Cancelo if he actually got consistent game time, because he's not as good as Trent, but he does threaten to go nuclear in a way that most defenders don't.
Yeah, slightly better defence as well than Liverpool. So closing thoughts, I guess, where should we invest at the back? Anthony's soliloquy there, I think, was a nice way of kind of bringing us back to that kind of central question. Where should we invest at the back? I mean, obviously people are going to say to us, you know, you're scarred a little bit from the weeks that's just gone. You know, centre-back's done well, likes of Rudiger. I mean, a little. But we've got evidence in audio format that a few weeks ago we were talking about this as well, about the expected minutes for centre-backs being well worth looking at. Trent's not looking anywhere. Trent's not going anywhere. We've spoken about this already. And Mins is key. But maybe we are transitioning towards getting close to what Morpheus Fire mentioned about having a double Chelsea, a double Man City kind of defence. I don't think we'd go that far by the sounds of it. It feels like it would be something moderated around maybe having three of the four. But I guess for me, the key is something investable has to have long-term value. And I still kind of default to that sort of buy and hold strategy defensively. And I want to follow that up with the next moves I make at the back. But from the discussion we've had just now, it sounds like we're all sort of pulling in the direction of centre-backs actually being really interesting for that sort of semblance of long-term sustainability in the investment we make. And I think that maybe is a little bit new, because I think later on in the year, around Christmas time, you know, we start to kind of say, oh, the centre-backs will play every game around Christmas. That's great. But around now, we're all kind of infatuated by those amazing sort of returns on offer, potentially from the attack-minded defenders. So I think it's maybe kind of a fascinating facet of this season that the centre-backs are beginning to catch our attention because of the fact that we've got those expected minutes. Maybe there's a hangover from COVID. We're a bit worried about, you know, having a shock no-show. But so, yeah, I mean, do you think that, you know, the centre-backs are here to stay as being interesting? I know they're so unsexy, aren't they? But at the same time, they could be the cornerstone of our teams, couldn't they?
Yeah, I think you mentioned Christmas being a period where games come thick and through. And of course, there's going to be cases where Rudiger gets dropped. Diaz was benched a lot of times last season towards that festive period of fixtures. But then that's still a long period of time to look ahead. So at least for the next 10 game weeks, these guys are going to be there, going to play every single minute of the fixtures. So I kind of feel aligned to preferring centre-backs, stable centre-backs from these premium teams to do their job in the next till game week 18 or so. I think that's when the second wild card comes into the picture. That's when the fixtures also become more congested, with the FA Cup also coming into play. Yeah.
Maybe to conclude, I'll take us in a slightly different direction. And I've just looked at what you would need to do to try and put together a team if you wanted to fit in the, let's say, the big defenders we've talked about and others. So it's like, talk about, let's say, getting in Rudiger, Diaz and Trent and then trying to work that with the threemium of Salah, Lukaku, and Ronaldo. And I'm working this now on the values that I've bought in players, which aren't necessarily the same as what you did or what you might have or whatever, but we'll just work with it. It allows you, as far as I can see, if you're operating with an 8.5 goalkeeper setup, whatever that might be, you have 36.1 to split between the final seven berths in your squad. That basically allows you 6 5.0s and a 5.5. It feels a little bit too tight to me in terms of building a balanced squad. So if really, if you want to go big in defense, I feel like you need to compromise on the threemium and go with just two of those premiums, the two of Salah, Lukaku, and Ronaldo, or whoever else you want to toss into that bracket. And I guess that is actually the debate that kind of brings together quite a lot of the pods that we've done so far this season, because that is really the crux of the issue, I think, that all of us are trying to grapple with when we look at whether these big defenders or big at the back is worth doing. It really does mean compromising on your threemiums and how brave you are to do that and whether you can cover those players or whatever. And I guess what we concluded in previous weeks was you probably can't cover the threemium, and that's why they are the threemium. And so do you then have to try and go without one of those big defenses, for example?
Cool. Yeah, that's really interesting to talk about. Right, let's take a break there and move on to the correspondence and questions after this.
Who got the assist?
All right, so we're back, and it's the correspondence section. We've had quite a few, actually, that have come in really recently, so we're well stocked for a little while. Nonetheless, Anthony's always willing to take questions, queries, songs, poems, statements of love, whatever you want to send. We're here for them, aren't we, Anthony?
Yeah, exactly. You can send all of those to whogottheassist@gmail.com or by other means of contacting us on Twitter DMs or whatever it might be, if that is the more suitable way of getting your message, whatever that may be, to us. But yeah, Rick Martin is this week's corresponder. And he sent us an email to, as I said, whogottheassist@gmail.com. And he's actually, since he sent this email, made an FPL account. So we might as well shout it out since he's a new one. It's at @FPL_RickyMartin. And his email was very much looking at 4.5 million defenders and went thusly. So, guys, your pod has been appointment listening for the past couple of seasons and I never miss an episode. However, I do think it's time you gave something back to me in return for my loyal listening. So this email came from 9 days ago and he was looking at the time at downgrading Christensen to a 4.5. So we're going to go in with that. He noted how good Chelsea's defense was, but he felt he needed to get a 4.5-ish candidate in to get the threemium setup actually well into his side. He actually has Alan as well, guys. So good. Anyway, he had narrowed his 4.5 choice down to Martial and Ayling because of their early season returns and their good fixtures. And he was asking us basically who we would go with in that 4.5 bracket. He ends with keep up the good work. Cheers. So I guess, Siri, I'll turn to you first, if you want, on this. Who are you looking at in this 4.5 bracket? We won't focus too much on Marcel and Ayling, and we'll just broadly attack the whole entire bracket, because I feel like anyone who's shopping in the bracket isn't going to limit themselves to any two names.
Yeah, I think Ayling is definitely a no-go for me, and he's probably injured too, so probably that rules Ayling out. And the quotes that was pointed at Marcel was also not really convincing. He said, I ignore he is really waiting on the wings to take up, and Marcel didn't really put up a good performance there. So if it was a Wolves 4.5, I'd probably say Cody. Of course, it's a very, very dull, boring pick over there. And I might as well go and play Livramento every single week. I think he's playing good, and he's a cheap value. Duffy is another good option, 4.3, fairly for 4 million ones, but I do feel they do a better job rather than the ones that are for per se sitting at 4.5. So I think these are the pool of players that I would consider.
I guess at 4.5, you're looking for a sense of longevity. I don't think that they're likely to constitute your 11, probably, unless you're going for a freemium setup. They're on the fringes, as with Ricky Martin's question. It's a player you're not really going to be relying on a lot, unless it's someone who's massively, you know, undervalued or mispriced, like Lundstrom or something like that. For 4.5, I'd be looking to find some sense of long-term investorship, as we've spoken about a couple of times. And my 4.5 was Cody. I think that I'm probably going to end up just keeping him because he's going to be sat, you know, first or second bench most weeks, and he's likely to come on and play. I'm obviously a little bit burnt from last week in terms of getting that 0-pointer from him against Brentford. And I don't think I'm going to be playing him anytime soon. I think I'll be playing Christensen over him this week, for example, even though they've got Man City. But I guess value-wise, two come to mind. So Ayling, obviously, we've written off, and I think that's probably the right thing to do. I think at the start of the season, he was one we're all interested in, but Leeds' defensive solidity is the same as the Cheese's defensive solidity against the Grill. Absolutely nothing there going on. It's melted away. Duffy, as I mentioned earlier, is just ridiculous. Bossing the CBI, most shots in the box, fourth baseline BPS amongst defenders. Bat of a bang. Really. It's quite good for the lad as well. It seems like he had a really tough year last year, and I'm sure we'll pick that up in just a minute. I think it's between him and Livramento, funnily enough, because you're looking for value, you're looking for long-term investorship. Both those players are both below 4.5. Livramento from game week 8 has a good run of fixtures into November, where he doesn't face any of the top 8 teams, so it looks like he's nailed the spot. Both are looking great for savings all round at the moment, so they're doing the job of 4.5 million defenders, as I mentioned earlier on. Well, just now, actually, I'm looking for a player who's going to provide me value as well as having that sort of long-term longevity in their team. And I'd probably be looking at the Irishman Duffy right now. I mean, at the start of the season, no one thought that he would be coming into play. And I think it's been a bit of a perfect storm in terms of him with Veltman's COVID diagnosis, as well as Webster not playing. And I guess maybe a bit of daring do when in terms of Duffy, that he's played his way back into that side. And now I think that it's very hard to see him losing his place until everybody's back fit again. So I think it would be my man Duffy here. No, your man Duffy as well, Anthony, for different reasons.
Yeah, it's been really nice to see Shane Duffy having as good of a start of the season as he's had. It's been he did have a very tough year. His father passed away. He obviously had a bad or difficult loan move up in Scotland as well, which coincided with that death. And yeah, that's always going to be very tough for someone. And it's kind of, I think it seems like Graham Potter has really done his best to kind of build up his confidence, and he's been very, very complimentary about him in the press all the way through so far this season with his good start to the season. And as you say, yes, Tom, a perfect storm may have swept him into the side, but he's very much there as the stalwart, ready to face any storm for that Brighton team going forward. And it does seem like he's unlikely to lose his place, at least in the short term. And long may that continue, I guess. And yeah, that Brighton defence is a pretty decent one to buy into, and I can totally see why you might want to, especially if, for example, you wanted to move away from Sanchez and goals. He is the good option there, and he's obviously a good way to save some money as well. Still at 4.3, he is a steal. Like, you know, he's such a goal threat that he kind of has this kind of fixture-proof value, which is kind of unexpected for a 4.5-ish, in this case, 4.3 defender, which I think adds to his appeal. For me, I still feel like Cody is a decent option to have in there, and I'm not too put up after one game. Like, he is no longer the meme that he was in previous years, where he would never get forward. Like, for example, he has had two shots in the box so far this season, negligible XG. Because he's up for corners, he's in there in the lottery, and you just feel like eventually something will come his way. And I do feel like that Wolves defense is grand for 4.5. I wouldn't like to be spending much more on a Wolves defender, but 4.5, perfect. Absolutely perfect. And the thing with Marcel, and maybe to just kind of really kind of go into him a little bit more, I just really fear his injury record. That's what I actually feel. In each of the last three seasons, he's missed at least a dozen games for his club. That's a lot of games to be missing. It's been in three injuries per season has effectively done it every time. If you just go on to Transfer Market and look at his injury history, it's there. It's there's nothing truly dramatic in there. The worst injury he had was a calf strain back in like 2018-19, but he seems to just consistently find something wrong with his body that just means he misses about a dozen games, as I say. And that is going to become a problem, especially with, as you say, Aitnori waiting there, ready to come into that side. The Brentford defenders, it seems like they're not a joke at this point. They have three really tough fixtures coming up in Liverpool, West Ham and Chelsea. But kind of after that, again, things clean up for them. And you'd kind of feel like they have those expected stats and they have been able to back them up so far. And that makes them pretty interesting. In the anyone else kind of bracket, maybe just to mop up this particular section, if you look at the algorithms, they'll point you towards, so in the case of Fantasy Football Fix, they are from game week 6 to 14 is what I picked. They have Wolves, Leeds, Southampton, Spurs, Chelsea in that order in terms of who has the best fixtures. And if you go on to Fantasy Football Hub, same time frame, so 6 to 14, they have Leeds, Leicester, Chelsea, Newcastle, Wolves, and then Southampton, who I've just thrown in for posterity there as the sixth best. So what you're looking at, I guess, there is Cody, a Leeds defender, if you believe in Leeds. Good old Livramento is a pretty good decent option to have in there. And then you're kind of looking at a real kind of lottery pick beyond those in terms of fixtures alone. But as I say, I think Duffy does occupy this kind of oddly fixture-proof zone that means that he's a pretty good pickup. I think that does round off the correspondence section, unless anybody has anything to add.
Nope, not at all.
So FPL Ricky Martin, he wrote into whogottheassist@gmail.com via email, of course. But you can get in contact with us that way too, with your poems, your thoughts, your addendums, your questions, whatever it may be. We'll take it in the correspondence section and we will get to it as soon as we can.
Right. Moving on to listener questions proper. The first one this week is from midfield malaise. So this is the second sort of highest asked question. All things surrounding the midfield and what the hell is going on there. James at James FPL 1 sums up nicely. Midfield, WTF, who are the reliable starters slash returns outside of Salah? He's got Torres, Greenwood and Traore. And I think he's looking at Rafinha, for example. But where are the points coming, he's saying, for those mid-price midfielders? Does it all basically lend itself to the freemium model doing well? After the Jaywa, he basically says, you know, Torres, keep or sell. Jota, keep or sell. Traore, keep or sell. The same three. Ooh, who do you replace them with? A good friend of mine, FPL Nima, he says, you know, should we keep Jota for the next game and can we move him on yet? And FPL Point Break, Andrew, says, all the popular 7-plus mids have something to come problems. You know, Greenwood less involved with Ron the team. Jota points dodging. Firmino coming back for him. Torres rotated. Mount hooked on the 45-minute mark. Do we stick with these picks or use them as cash cows to upgrade to nailed defenders like Rudiger or Diaz? Hooray. So preempting again, we spoke about this week. Oh, Jota. Oh, dear me. Top underperformer again this week, 0.94. He missed out on 0.89 minus over the course of the season. Actually, Sadio Mane has underperformed more than him in terms of XGI, but that was basically because of one game where he couldn't find back of the net. Has he busted his flush with those two goals in game weeks 1 and 2? Torres, obviously, massively frustrating as well. I'm tempted to move him on. Anthony called me harsh by implication earlier on to be looking at moving Torres on. I'm not sure I'll be doing that. I think the one player that I would really be interested in, I know we've got Demarai Gray at home against Norwich, and I know that perhaps Doucouré, the Duke, could play number 10 against Norwich, so that could be really interesting. But the one player I'm really interested in still is Conor Gallagher, or Gallagher, as I've been told to call him. So he's sixth by 0.06 of an MPXG to Salah on that measure, so sixth. Plays Crystal Palace. He's on corners and indirect free kicks, direct free kicks as well. Fourth for respect to goal involvement amongst midfielders. And fourth for respect to goal involvement overall, actually. Could be an anomaly, but that's really cool, actually, for a 5.6 midfielder playing for Crystal Palace. And if I was looking to make a midfield move, either moving on Torres, which I might be, I think he would probably be where I go to. I mean, Suya, what do you make about the midfield? I mean, we've mentioned them a few times, mentioned them in the market forces and so on and so forth. But I mean, what do you think about all of these sort of players? Are they worth kind of persisting with? Or would you be kind of saying, you know what, get rid of them, it's time now, and just to focus on other things?
Yeah, I think Andrew actually makes a fair enough case. I think all of those popular 7 million plus midfielders are kind of breaking. Greenwood is slowly waning off, and I think Cavani is anytime expected soon back. Jota is again a lost cause. The only one that has seemed to be fairly consistently playing is Grealish, and of course, but the appeal that he had at the beginning of the season is not there still yet. People and as I think Anthony pointed out, this might be the season wherein tripling up on Man City is not going to be a big problem. As in earlier, we used to think of triple Man City attack, or at least that spot has opened up because there's a lot of options. And if in case you're going big at the back, or if you're going with three premiums in terms of Salah, Lukaku and Ronaldo, I think it fairly makes sense to go with players like Gray, Gallagher, Doucouré for that, and Saar, because you're not going to play all of them together every single week. You'll probably play two of them or one of them, and I think they offer fair enough good value compared to what these guys inconsistently offer in terms of Mount or Jota. That's my thinking. So I think these people should match the five to 6.5 people, the players in that region should match the odd ones, as in the ones right. That's the premium and in the budget bracket, yeah.
We said at the start of the season that they're all quite bunched up for a reason, because they were trying to hedge the value, so they weren't entirely sure. And maybe with Torres, I'll have given one last dance. I think I've probably got other things to do this week. Jota, again, one last dance against Brentford, and he's out because of that Man City game. But I mean, it's quite tough, isn't it, Anthony, to guess what to do in around that sort of kind of mid-price, mid-bracket?
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think on Greenwood, actually, and just something I didn't, a stat I didn't get to crowbar in anywhere else in the pod, so I'm going to crowbar it in right here on Greenwood and just point out that in the last two game weeks, obviously the two game weeks that Manchester United have played with Cristiano Ronaldo in their team, when you look at shots in the box, it's genuinely terrifying what has happened to the prospects of all of the rest of their players. Cristiano Ronaldo has had 12 shots in the box. The next best are Harry Maguire, Jesse Lingard, Jadon Sancho, and Rafael Varane with 2 shots in the box. A hoover for their chances. It's just unbelievable what's happened. Like, he has turned Manchester United into Juventus last season in a fortnight. It's not good, I don't think. And so I think, yeah, if you had Greenwood, I'd be sell. But on Jota, for example, I do feel like... I don't know. When you're getting in the chances, when you're getting in the positions and you have the level of chances that he has, I kind of feel like the broken clock is going to come right quite soon. And I'm just very, very slow to move him on because of that. The Brentford game doesn't strike me as a good fixture, actually, because of what we've seen Brentford do so far. But the fact of the matter is, it would be peak Jota to go and score a brace in that game, just when you're just thinking of selling him. Just when maybe when you sell him, Tom, it would be great if you did.
I know you're not,
but it would be great if you did, just because I think that's how it would trigger the moment.
You know what's happening? You know what's happening? It's happening as Man City. That's going to be when he shows up and does something, because everyone's going to sold him at that point. And everyone's like, he's such a troll.
It would be great. It would be so, so great, because I don't think I'll manage to get to sell them by then. So maybe I might get those. I think, though, you're generally right that there is so many good options there for less that enable you to, let's say, go big at the back, which is what we've been talking about earlier, where there are seemingly much more consistent points to be gotten, or to enable the 3 million, which we spent the last two pods basically talking about. And so from that perspective, I think, you know, this kind of idea that we had, and I think it was in your wildcard, and I still think it's a sensible idea and I don't condemn it by any means, but I can totally see why people are like, oh, the 7 and 7.5-ish midfield bracket, dump them and allow yourself to kind of just get the points that we know seem to be coming from the back so far and to move with it. Personally, I'd give both Jota and Torres at least another week or two, purely because I just feel like the chances are going to come their way against any opposition because they play for that type of team.
Fair enough. We'll come on to that in the transfers and captains as well. Me also being in the owning Jota and also owning Torres kind of bracket. But no, I hear what you're saying about Greenwood. I think that probably is one that a few people are concerned about, aren't they? And selling Ronaldo is all over Twitter at the moment because obviously there were loads of plans, including mine, to sell Ronaldo in game week 7. Not the case anymore. So Karen Tyers has summed this up very nicely. So he looks forward to the pod tonight. Are we still planning to sell Ronaldo for Lukaku in game week 7? Or maybe game week 8? Or is having both the Ronkaku and Noodles the way to go? So I think this is probably perhaps actually low-key the most interesting question of this week. I think maybe it's going to come up again next week. You know, the Battle of the Talismans, I suppose. And Neil Gutsch already also asked about this, actually, on our Slack. But is it, you know, Talisman Ronaldo versus Talisman Lukaku, what do you do? When do you do it? So game week 7 against Everton or game week 8 against Leicester, are you going to move on to Lukaku, who's got Southampton and Brentford in corresponding fixtures? For me, as a Ronaldo owner, I think it's week 8. For me, if I'm not sure yet either, but I'm not sure if I buy the argument about him being fixture-proof, which I've seen kind of begin to promulgate on FPL Twitter. Lots of evidence thrown up by the likes of Mark on Black Box. And our friend I mentioned earlier, FPL Janinho, sent us this. He said he looked at Ronaldo's fixture-proofness last year against the top 4 clubs in Serie A. He played 7 games, 2 goals and 0 assists. He blanked against the likes of Atlanta, AC Milan, Napoli away. He scored against them at home. And he also scored a goal against Inter at home. But, you know, 7 games, 2 goals. For Lukaku, it's a little bit better. So 8 games he played. He wasn't injured for any of those games, whereas Ronaldo did miss a game against Atlanta. 4 goals, 1 assist. And maybe it could be better off playing the fixtures. I think, however you look at it, if you sell him game week 7 or game week 8, it's hugely justified to be selling any player who's playing Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea in the space of five game weeks, which he does after game week eight, no matter who they are. Pen goals are likeliest to be what hurts you, as you guys have both found Salah very recently. But that's, you know, that's one of those things you can't really legislate for. It's knowing when that happens, but you can be happy about the decision you've made. I think Ronaldo as well, there's the tyranny of FDR at play too. Everton listed as a four in game week seven, but no Pickford. And obviously them kind of struggling a little bit could kind of mean that four is one of those is a little bit questionable. And if we're leaning into the silliness full on, there's two early games for Ronaldo. So 12:30 this week, 12:30 next week. No, I'm not going to buy that. But yeah, I'm kind of thinking that, you know, game week nine versus Norwich for Chelsea, that's the one where you want Lukaku. I find it very, very hard to kind of say with any confidence that I won't have Lukaku that week. But you can build a narrative, and I'm consciously doing this right now. I'm not sure when I'm going to commit to making the move because I'm on the aggressive kind of premium moving strategy rather than having a freemium or a two-dog kind of man me. The game week seven opponents, Southampton for Lukaku, they have kept a clean sheet against Man City. They have kept a clean sheet against West Ham with Antonio on the pitch for the majority of the game, and they've drawn 1-1 with United. So they're not kind of a pushover, as you might expect. Game week eight against Brentford, well, could they still be masquerading as a decent defence by then? Could they be, like, you know, a new Sheffield United? Who knows? Whereas Cristiano Ronaldo in those two games is playing against Everton at home and a spiralling Leicester in the same time. I was setting up to play the aggressive strategy, and it's about kind of when the threshold is moving the player on. I mean, I can see people moving in game week seven and kind of going, oh, you know, Ronaldo's got Everton, and who have got luminaries such as Luca Dean and luminaries such as Yerry Mina holding up their defence, and wow, you know, it's well worth holding on. I think game week nine is when it becomes a bit of a non-question, because having no Lukaku against Norwich is probably going to be the time to do it. And there's obviously 1 million difference between Lukaku and Ronaldo, which kind of makes it okay to hold it for a couple of weeks. So I think that's probably going to be the time I go for it. Are we still going to do it? I think I'm still going to do it, but I think I'm going to leave money in the bank to buy Ronaldo back. I think that that's kind of just clear, because from game 15 onwards, Man United's fixtures are really, really good. What do you guys think? Surya, where are you on this?
I really want the Ronaldo Lukaku double up to work, but I don't think that's going to end up really great, because I don't see United scoring a considerable or win by a considerable margin against these big oppositions. Of course, Ronaldo does well in big games, but all of it are historical stats. It doesn't prove anything that he's going to come good against all of these opponents. And when you have a ready-made player like Lukaku facing teams like Norwich City, I think it does make the sense to hop off Ronaldo and go to Lukaku, and then probably have money in the bank and get back to him. But there is still one part of me that says Ronaldo too will do far enough well against big opposition, because he should be motivated to get United where they are. But of course, all of it are time dependent, how the games goes, how the first 10-20 minutes pan out, and what there's too much of risk and uncertainty involved in holding Ronaldo and expecting him to match what Lukaku could to get out of opposition like North City. So at the moment, I'm planning to hop Ronaldo off and go to Lukaku and still keep the stability of my team and go big at the back. So that's what I'm thinking as of now. Yeah.
So I'm obviously a little bit different to you both in that I'm off with my threemium right now. I still have it. I have Lukaku already. I have Ronaldo right now. I do not, as it stands, intend to sell Ronaldo unless I kind of get a compelling reason to move him on. The compelling reason may well be, of course, that I could, you know, distribute funds throughout my team in a little bit more of a logical way. Yeah, it could. Yes, it could, dear listener. But the fact of the matter is that right now I'm just not at all set up to do that. And so it's just not quite something that I'm kind of trying to work towards. I have enough reason, I feel, to hold on to Ronaldo for Villa, Everton, Leicester. And then after that, it's like, okay, then there's the worrying patch. There's Liverpool. Okay, right, Liverpool. Tottenham. Ooh, so scary. You know, like, come on. And then Manchester Derby against City, like that's at home as well. Like, could you think of a more inevitable occasion for Ronaldo to have a big game? And so it kind of feels like, you know, trying to find a reason to say that, oh, against for Juventus when Juventus had a pretty poor season under Andrea.
It's Ronaldo. It's Ronaldo. He can say it's anyone.
For a Juventus team who were having a poor season under Andrea Pirlo, who it didn't quite work out under. Now in a different team with a very different structure or no structure, depending on how they decide to play. But who have been notably good against top six sides under Ole. If anything, they have always got a plan against top six sides, if not against the others. I don't necessarily feel all that nervous holding on to Ronaldo through any of those games, to be perfectly honest with you. And I kind of feel like Ronaldo is, but it's Ronaldo. He is a little bit inevitable. Penalties are inevitable as well. And, you know, like he could have had three penalties against West Ham. Like, surely he could have had two. He could easily have had one. You know, like...
But you think that could be symptomatic, though, about how he is perceived by referees? Because there were obviously, I think there was a good argument that two of those penalties were legitimate penalties. Mm-hmm. If a referee doesn't give it on the pitch, then VAR is powerless, right? So do you reckon there's an overhang with the kind of player Ronaldo is, you know, kind of like profiling, as it were, that could curtail that impact?
There is. Until this week, the referees are being all analysed for failing to give him penalties. And now people are like, oh, goodness, we better, you know, it's like you can spin this any way you like.
You could say
now it's like the referees feel like they can't not give him the penalty because this is the opprobrium that comes about when they don't.
Yeah.
And like in this sense, you know, the greater referee idea are very fortunate that, you know, United ended up winning that game, because if they hadn't, from that perspective, it wouldn't have been particularly fair.
There's a unique ability to spin narratives however you want around all premium players,
but Ronaldo, I think in a way there is always the "but it's Ronaldo" question. You know, it's like, you know, it's like
you just had to watch the Ireland Portugal game to feel like "but it's Ronaldo," and you'll never feel anything but.
Anyway, let's move on to the next question without delving into a Hindu monkey pit of despair. The final question this week around goalkeepers. Hooray! It's not like I've engineered it this way. Not at all. So James Carroll and Adam Pritchard mentioned the last thing about goalkeepers. So James said, who even are the decent goalkeeper picks at the moment? Adam Pritchard always says, yeah, I'm interested in that, mate. And Joshua Biggs has the same problem as me. Oh, wow. I was really, really trying to fish for that. And someone did come through. Josh, what Big C, good guy. I've spoken to him for many, many years, actually. And he's got the same problem I do. He's looking where to go from backman. So if you're on Sanchez, I guess you're pretty okay. I mean, Brighton's kind of defensive numbers are fairly decent, we've spoken about. But outside of that, it's kind of open season, really. And I'm in a position where I've got Backman and I've got to probably move him on because I'm sure that Foster's going to hold the role. And there is a trophy unlock potential for me in front of me, guys. There's like an achievement unlock on Xbox, a trophy unlock in PlayStation style, which is I could do the most boring transfer the world's ever seen. I could do, hold your breath, Steer to Foster. I could have both Watford goalkeepers and commit to just doing that.
And thanks everyone for listening.
Good night. But I did have a look around for goalkeepers around this sort of area. Ray is obviously the one. If I had more money, I'd be looking at. I've only got 4.5, so I can't really buy him. But 13 shots on target faced, 11 saves made. I think he's probably a pretty decent goalkeeper effectively, but in 4.5 sort of area, it's not the best. So you've got the Sanchez sort of place, you've got Ramsdale recently doing okay, but too much of a risk, I think, because I think Leno could come in whenever. So I've kind of homed in on McCarthy, Sanchez and Guaita.
Just buy Sanchez and end it.
Yeah, no,
please, for the love of God, make it stop.
I'm not sure. Like, I think I might get greater. So they've played Spurs, Liverpool, Chelsea, and West Ham already, Crystal Palace, and level with Brighton for expected clean sheets. And he's also got more saves per minute, more saves from shots on target, and he's got more saves than those kinds of players. So it could be that. But I guess kind of linking back to what we've spoken about throughout this podcast, I have noticed from doing some messing around this evening, as I said earlier on, that I could buy Edison. I could sell Torres for Gallagher, and I could throw Edison in for Backman, which probably could be worth looking at if we're saying that, you know, long-term investments in City are worth looking at. And FPL Dread said that question about, you know, about kind of premium goalkeepers actually being the assassin, because you've got all this sort of rotation in defence and you've got the goalkeeper kind of staying on. I mean, could he be the ultimate Galaxy brain move to bring in Edison? I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm overplaying, basically.
I really just think just go for Ederson, to be honest. And if you really don't feel like doing that, then just get Sanchez. I can be as reductive as that with my answer.
I don't think I'm using two for chances this week. So I think it's going to be one. So I think it's probably looking at Sanchez versus Guaita. I might get Guaita for the lulls.
Oh, but that's a long-term compromise.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, next week, I've got to get rid of Jota as well. So, you know, I want two free transfers actually in game week 7 for the Chelsea turnaround. And I think that will probably be when I bring in another Chelsea defender. So I think this week I want to do one. 4.5 is what I've got. So I've got to look at Sanchez. I've got to look at Guaitar or McCarthy. I mean, it's terrible, isn't it, really? Anyway, enough of self-indulgence to move on to transfers and captains. And Surya, you're first. So your bus team, you've got Ronaldo captain against Aston Villa. You have one free transfer, right? So what are you going to do?
So it's more or less likely him and his out for Antonio. And then the captaincy is between Salah, Ronaldo, and an outside chance is Antonio. So that's the move that I'll be probably making. The bench is also fairly enough set. I think I wouldn't disturb any of it. So it's going to be Jimenez to Antonio in all likelihood. And one of Salah or Ronaldo to be captaincy options. The one thing that keeps putting me off of Salah's that slightly is that Brentford defensive numbers are good. Of course, it's against a top 7 team for the first time this season. We'll have to see how they do really well. And more or less likely, I'll end up captaining Salah after all of these rambling. So that's me. So it's going to be Jimenez to Antonio. Yeah.
So where I'm at right now is, having used two free transfers, I now found myself with one free transfer. And I currently know what I'm going to do in terms of my forwards. I will be keeping Lukaku, Ronaldo and Antonio, probably captaining Ronaldo. That's where I'm at right now. In midfield, as it stands, I have Salah, Jota and Benrahma in my starting lineup. I have Alan and Rafinha, who's currently an injury doubt on the bench. I'd like to play Rafinha in that game, but I don't know if he's going to be fit. There'd be a bit of a temptation to make a transfer there, but I kind of feel like I should just sit on my hands. Benrahma is someone who I want to move on. Jota is someone who I was considering moving on, but I don't want to do it just yet. And so they're both going to survive another week in all likelihood. My defense right now, I have starting Soufal, Cody, White and Livramento, with Ayling with his yellow flag on the bench. Cody, Southampton, you just don't know what's going to happen with Southampton. That could be a clean sheet for them. Likewise, Livramento, Wolves could get an XG of like 17 and still end up scoring nothing. So you might as well start him, and he has a bit of an attacking threat too. And then White against Tottenham. Tottenham have been really struggling. In North London derby, this is a real chance for Arsenal, having been so criticised defensively, to prove that defensively they are actually solid. And so I think Ben White is obviously going to start that game for me no matter what. So I think that four could quite easily be settled. And I still have Sanchez in goal as well. If I can, actually, I wouldn't mind rolling my transfer, even though I have two injury doubts on my bench and the King, Alan, just ready there to swoop in if I need to. I need to move towards the Chelsea fixtures shift and get some sort of premium defender in. I suspect in the longer term, what I'm going to do is I will weaken my midfield slightly and downgrade one of Benrahma, Jota or Rafinha to fund a move up to a better defender from Soufal. It's just how I get to that with probably two free transfers if I roll this one. I'm not quite sure yet.
Bad play. I mean, this is the week to play Alan, isn't it, Anthony? I mean, he's playing against Norwich. You've been amazing. Stanning Alan for a long time, and I'm a bit disgusted that you've not decided to play him.
The thing with Alan is that he's always ready, you know, and at the moment it will come. Like, who will be there if Jota
moment,
doesn't play?
It's perfect
Alan.
Moment with you. I mean,
who will be there
no way.
If White disappears for some reason? Alan. Who will be there if Livramento's time ends? Alan. You know, he's a constant. On my bench.
I'm genuinely hoping Alan gets two assists this week.
And Lukaku gets an injury in the warm up and suddenly emerges. Alan emerges onto my side.
I'm really hoping he's staring at you with double figure hole.
We fed the French king. It would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Anyway, so for me, I've got a pretty decent team this week, actually. I think I'm going to be rolling over another sort of transfer. I think I'm going to be basically sat there looking at baking a goalkeeper transfer. I think I'm going to be getting Guaita. Sorry, guys. I'm going to ignore you both. I think that at the back, I've got Christensen, TAA and Shaw as the three at the back. In midfield, Bemrama against Leeds, fair enough. Jota, a last dance, effectively. Salah and Rafinha. If Rafinha doesn't play, then Torres comes in. Antonio, Ronaldo and Dennis. So I'm going to be benching Torres for Dennis because I've got Christensen. I can imagine that game being about not losing rather than anything else. So I can imagine that being a 6-pointer. And I've got Cody second sub, so doing his job effectively. So if Chris doesn't play, then Cody comes in and does that job. The team's okay. Again, I'm not really too worried about any of that. I'm not too worried about benching Torres. And I think that entire team works okay. I think that's it though, isn't it, Anthony?
Yeah, it is. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We were Who Got the Assist. We would greatly appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review if you liked what you heard and haven't done so already in recent times. YouTube, if you want to watch us rather than listen to us, then you can go to search WGTA on YouTube or search Who Got the Assist if you're just a bit of a long form type, and you will find the podcast there too. Correspondence, if you want to get it in, whogottheassist@gmail.com, Tom's DMs, my DMs, Tom's number if you have it, my number if you have it, and the league code if you wish to join it, 3IP43T. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Surya.
Thanks guys. It was fun recording. Of course, I felt a bit sleepy in between, but then I still powered through the entire session. It was great talking to both of you. And it was a whole lot of fun being on Who Got the Assist. I kind of kicking in that I was a guest on Who Got the Assist. Yeah, it was so fun. Probably I'll be back sometime soon.
Yeah, we'll have you back again soon. So, yeah. Oh my God, it must be, what is it, 4 o'clock Indian time? So you better go to sleep now. Really great to have you on.
and we should say, by the way, as well, just to your Twitter handle, I should have said it, it's @allaboutFPL. That's all one word. There's no underscores or anything in there, just @allaboutFPL.
That's it. I hope just you thinking about defenders for your season going forward. About next week, as usual, I'm not sure what we're going to be talking about. There's a start of having data.
Premiums, are they good?
We're not prosaic, Anthony. The start of having data is going to be really good next week. So I get to do some messing around with data and graphs and things. So that'd be really, really fun. But in the meantime, hope to see you very, very soon. Goodbye.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Podcast Network.